Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, Texts 12 and 13. And Sutapa Prabhu is going to lead the chanting because he's so kind to those who are not very good at Sanskrit.
So we're reading from text number 13.
So that was text 13. We're going to read text 12 and 13. And 12 is the translation. O Maharaj Parikshit, descendant of King Bharat, Vasudev could understand that this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Having concluded this without a doubt, he became fearless. Bowing down with folded hands and concentrating his attention, he began to offer prayers to the child who illuminated his birthplace by his natural effulgence. Purport. Struck with great wonder, Vasudev now concentrated his attention on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Understanding the influence of the Supreme Lord, he was surely fearless, since he understood that the Lord had appeared to give him protection. Understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present, he appropriately offered prayers as follows. And thus text 13. Vasudev said, My Lord, you are the Supreme Person, beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge, by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly. Purport. Within Vasudev's heart, affection for his son and knowledge of the Lord's, Supreme Lord's transcendental nature both awakened. In the beginning, Vasudev thought, such a beautiful child has been born, but now Kamsa will come and kill him. But when he understood that this was not an ordinary child, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became fearless. Regarding his son as the Supreme Lord, wonderful in everything, he began offering prayers appropriate to the Supreme Lord. Completely free from fear of Kamsa's atrocities, he accepted the child simultaneously as an object of affection and as an object of worship by prayers. Om Magina Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. A lovely text and purport. I have here a picture. It's a miniature. It's from a version of the Srimad Bhagavatam painted in Kashmir in 1800. So this was taken from the full Bhagavatam. This is only one piece. And you can see it's the Kashmiri, you can see the kind of influence. And it's a miniature, it's difficult to see, but it's kind of a castle. And on the top is Vasudev and Devaki, and little Krishna has just appeared. And at the bottom are the guards who have just fallen asleep. So I'm going to send it around with a magnifying glass, because you're going to need a magnifying glass. And I'd like to see it back again, if at all possible. Just to give you an idea, this isn't a new story. This is, you know, over 200 years old. But of course, we know that this is hundreds and hundreds, thousands, or even timeless. It's not dependent on time, and it's not about time. I was asked in the run-up to Janmashtami in this class to speak about how to experience the joy of Janmashtami every day, which is fine, a fine request. I suppose you'd have to have experienced the joy of Janmashtami to appreciate anything else I'm going to say in the class, I suppose. And we'd have to define joy a little bit. But one thing to remember first is that we've just celebrated Balaram's appearance day, and of course Balaram appears before Krishna significantly. Vala, as you will have heard, means spiritual strength. It refers to spiritual strength. So we're dependent on spiritual strength before Krishna comes. So before we can appreciate Krishna, we must have some spiritual strength, some spirituality about us. Otherwise, we can't even see Krishna. We can't recognize Krishna, what to speak of receive Krishna. We don't know how to serve him. We don't know how to trust him. And we won't consequently be willing to bear suffering and give up our material happiness so that we can experience joy. So to experience joy, we have to leave the material behind, and that means the happiness and the distress of the material world. And that requires some strength, bench strength, as they would call it. We have to go to the spiritual gym, lift some spiritual weights. It's called sadhana. There has to be some practice. We have to become as singular in our attention as an athlete, as any person practicing in a gym. Why do they go to a gym? You have to be quite motivated. You have to pay money anyway. You have to be quite motivated. And then you have to follow through and go X number of times a week. And the exercises are strenuous. So you're giving energy to this. But that's the same in our relationship with Krishna. We have to learn how to give energy, how to have the strength, build up that strength, so that when the material comes, we're ready for it. It's not a problem. We can run up that hill. We can run down that hill. Whatever has to be done, we'll do it. It's not going to be an issue for us. But unless we have that strength, it's very difficult for us to be able to think about Krishna, to have time for Krishna, because Krishna requires a bit of focus. This a little Krishna story. I have a little Giriraj, and you do your puja for him every day, and you're developing a relationship with him. And one day I was really in a rush. I had an appointment very early in the morning, so everything was quick, fast. And I put on his little eyes and his little mouth, and then I was doing something, and his eyes fell off. So I put them on again, like pressed them on, and they fell off again. And I was getting annoyed. And I realized, who was I getting annoyed with? Krishna. I didn't have time. I didn't have time for this, And I said, you're just looking for attention. And I was right. Of course he is. That's the whole game. We're all looking for attention. Krishna's looking for attention. He wants our love so that he can give us his love, so that we can appreciate his love. It's there. He's trying to give it to us. He's trying to get us to appreciate it. And we don't have time because we don't have that strength to be able to let go the material and understand, now is Krishna time. This is Krishna time. So now whatever happens, if his eyes fall off 16 times, I'm there. I'm his servant. I'll put them on 16 times with a smile on my face because he's demanding my attention. That's great. Finally, after all these lifetimes, Krishna's demanding my attention and I'm there to give it. We have to be ready for that. We have to be strong for that. Another question that comes up is, why does Krishna come? Now, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita 4.7 and in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 9th canto in the 24th chapter, verse 56, it says the same thing. It's practically the same verse, that Krishna comes to protect his devotees, to show compassion to his devotees and to annihilate the demons. Prabhupada says that Krishna comes more as a reciprocation to the devotees than to kill the demons. And that's important for us to understand. So when we hear these things, it seems like he's doing these equally. So he's got two things on his mind. But he's really got one thing on his mind. He's coming to show his love for us more than kill the demon within us. The demons of our envy, our cruelty, our greed, our pride. His love is more important and more powerful than the negative. And how do we make Krishna appear to us? That's a great question, isn't it? We all want God to appear before us. And Bhumi did it. Bhumi cried out, went to Brahma, said, help. All these people trampling all over me, they're really unqualified. It's really a mess now. It's really a pressure. I don't like it. And Brahma went to Narayan and said, can we help Bhumi? And Narayan said, yes, I'll come. Because he heard the cry from the heart. It wasn't the official kind of reciprocation with Brahma as a figurehead, and he goes and he makes his official thing. Krishna was responding to Bhumi Devi, Mother Earth. And we think we have nothing to say about environmentalism. Krishna responds to Mother Earth. You know, if she cries, he's there. And this happens over and over again. He comes because of the cry from the heart, because Krishna is kind to his devotees. He reciprocates with that. And then what he does after that is what has to be done. So killing the demons and all that kind of stuff, that's actually secondary. That's just what he has to do to protect the devotees, but he's coming out of love and compassion. And that's what is required to protect someone. So how do we make Krishna appear in our heart? We have to cry out, like Arjuna did. And in the text, it's very interesting that Vasudev overcame his fear. And then he knew what to do. He knew what he could do. He was free to see clearly without the shackles of fear and anxiety. Because these color our perception. They color our ability to see clearly what's happening. So we become restrained by fear. So we can't see the possibilities. It's like a friend of mine, Gangadhar in Holland, he's terminally ill at the moment. He's got a few weeks to live, maybe. And we've been talking regularly. And we were talking about the fear of death. And that is the big fear. We all know fear and anxiety. But the big fear is this. There's little fears and there are big fears, but this is the big fear. And he has cancer, and he was saying with the pain, he bore it for as long as he could without medication, but then it got to the stage where he couldn't think of Krishna. And he didn't know that that's what happened. He thought you just bear it out and you always think of Krishna, but actually if the material circumstance gets too difficult, we can't think of Krishna. And therefore that's what fear and anxiety does, and pain, suffering. But fear and anxiety is constant. It's constantly in the background of our lives, always going on to some degree. And Prabhupada gives a prognosis about fear and a prescription. I'll just read from the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, text 4 and 5, is Prabhupada's purport. Fear is due to worrying about the future. A person in Krishna consciousness has no fear because by his activities he is sure to go back to the spiritual sky, back home, back to Godhead. Therefore his future is very bright. Others, however, do not know what their future holds. They have no knowledge of what the next life holds, so they are therefore in constant anxiety. As you can see, the fear is fear of death. If we want to get free from anxiety, then the best course is to understand Krishna and be situated always in Krishna consciousness. In this way, we will be free from all fear. And then he quotes the Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Fear is caused by our absorption in the illusory energy. But those who are free from the illusory energy, those who are confident that they are not the material body, that they are spiritual parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who are therefore engaged in the transcendental service of the Supreme Godhead, have nothing to fear. Their future is very bright. This fear is a condition of persons who are not in Krishna consciousness. Abhayam, fearlessness, is possible only for one in Krishna consciousness. So it's a wonderful analysis. And fear is due to worrying about the future. That sentence just kind of says it all. We're worrying about something that hasn't happened and may never happen. We don't know. But the fear is there. But the fear is kind of real. I mean, hands up all of you who are not afraid of death, because we can arrange it today. Any takers? You're not afraid of death? You would like to die now? You don't care? Keep taking the pills. Well, then serve as much as possible. Abhayam, Krishna consciousness. Excellent. Excellent.
In the Gallup poll in the United States, fear, as you said, was the death was the number one fear.
Yeah, it is without doubt, yeah.
But I feel that as one becomes more and more of a devotee, that fear may be there, but I feel it will diminish.
Yes, it diminishes, as Prabhupada said, as we realize who we are. We gain confidence in ourselves and our capacity. And we gain confidence in our relationship with Krishna, that we are related to Krishna, that Krishna loves us, and that fear is not the end, death is not the end. So there is nothing to fear. So that's true Vedantically in terms of we're not the body, but it's true more importantly for devotees in that we are eternal servants of Krishna. We're eternal, not the body, but we're servants of Krishna. Therefore, it doesn't matter what happens. The only fear then is just pain. It's like going to the dentist. We go to the dentist for cosmetic reasons, generally, and health reasons. We still go, even though we're afraid. And death is the same except different, shall we say. So it's getting the circumstance into context. It's not that there isn't pain in the world or suffering. It's just how we relate to it as devotees of Krishna. So, good point. Well, let's do the questions and answers after, otherwise I'll get nowhere with it. I have all these notes and stuff, and I have to get through it, otherwise I don't feel complete. I'm afraid. I remember years ago, I think it was 1980, Vitravirya Prabhu, who, if you don't know, you really should know the history of ISKCON England. Vitravirya Prabhu was one of the natural leaders of ISKCON England, quite an astonishing devotee, a wonderful person. And he had gone to India, and he came back, and he had got malaria when he was in India, and it was very severe, and he nearly died. And I remember he was sitting just over there, and there was a discussion, and then the person giving class looked to him and said, "Vitravirya, you have faced death. You know, you're strong." And Vitravirya, he started to cry. And he was like the leader of the Atra. Everyone was kind of, no one knew what had happened. And he said, and I remember I was a very young devotee. And he said, "I couldn't chant." It was like, you know, as a young devotee, like everyone in the room was shocked and stunned, because that's what we live for, chant at the time of death. That's what it's all about. And he was making this admission, this honesty. I was struck by his humility, his honesty. To me, that was real leadership. Like, wow, this person is being so clear about who he was and what his real condition in this material world was, that we're afraid of death. And he was dying, and he couldn't chant. He was in and out of consciousness, but when he was out of consciousness, he was afraid. He was in anxiety. And that's, anyway, so just thought I'd share that we have to be that honest so that we can deal with the circumstance. Because we're all caught up in our material stories, our exams, our children, our Coronation Street lives. You know, there's going on one episode after another, the soap opera of our lives, afraid of what will go right or what will go wrong. And Krishna's stories are not temporary like that. They're timeless, always relevant, the deep reality of our lives, the bigger, brighter story, our story, really. That's really our story, if we can see it. Kamsa couldn't see anything like this. Kamsa was full of fear. He was afraid to lose his reputation. That's the reason why he didn't kill Devaki. And he was afraid particularly of death. His whole meditation is, "Krishna will kill me." And that fear of death was what impelled him to send all these demons to Vrindavan. So they all went for different reasons, and they represent, our acharyas say, different material aspects. But behind it all was fear. That was the motivating factor behind everything to do with that story. It's born of fear. And Krishna defeated them all. undefeated Kamsa. We're afraid of death because we can't see Krishna in it. We can't accept Krishna in it, or accept that Krishna is in it, or accept that it's not a reaction or due, or there's so many things about death that are confusing to us, frightening to us. But if we can see Krishna in it, it loses its fear. Kamsa was going to die like everyone's going to die. And Krishna came to him as death. He comes to us all as death. But if we see Krishna in it and accept Krishna, then it's a different thing. Because Krishna is everywhere. Therefore, of course, he's in death. It's a part of our relationship with Krishna. It's a part of our ability to embrace Krishna, to embrace death, and confront our fear and understand it for what it is. So whatever difficulty happens in our life is Krishna. We just look for Krishna in it. And we practice looking for Krishna in it all our lives, in all the difficulties. And then when death comes, it's not so difficult. It's Krishna. Because we've practiced that. We've done that weight training. We've trained our mind to it. There are two texts from the ninth canto. I'd like to... they're relevant for this. Again, they're from the 24th chapter. And that's the last chapter of the ninth canto. And after these verses, that's when Parikshit Maharaj says, tell me more about this. This is great stuff. Tell me more about this. And that's when the 10th canto starts. That's why we're reading what the text we're reading today. Texts 2461. To show causeless mercy to the devotees who take birth in the future, in the age of Kali, the Supreme Lord Krishna acted in such a way that simply by remembering him, one will be freed from all the lamentation and unhappiness of material existence. So simply by remembering Krishna, that's the secret. And so in this age of Kali, he says he's making it easy for us. And 62, simply by receiving the glories of the Lord through purified transcendental ears, and they become purified by hearing about Krishna, the devotees of the Lord are immediately freed from strong material desires and engagement in fruitive activities. So we're freed from strong material desires, and that we know our material desires are strong. We feel bound by them, and our fear is strong, but we become freed from that simply by hearing, by meditating, by doing this weightlifting. And Prabhupada says in the Gita, in the 18th chapter, in the 6th verse, in the purport, he talks about the six aspects of surrender. He said, one should be confident that in all circumstances, Krishna will protect him from all difficulties, or protect her from all difficulties. There's no need to think of thinking how one should keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself, herself, helpless, and should consider Krishna the only basis for his progress in life. And that's the kind of surrender, the kind of letting go, that if we can let go like that, then we give up fear, because we depend on Krishna in every circumstance. And that's what Vasudev did. That's what he realized. When he realized that, becoming fearless, he became actually able to work in the world. Really able to work in the world. And that's really our, as devotees, that's the platform we need to be on, to be effective, to help people in their suffering, to help them understand what is the joy of Janmashtami, or what is joy at all. Because joy is ananda. Sukha is happiness. iPad happiness, where you get the new iPad. There's a new iPad coming out, I hear, pretty soon. Da-da-da-da, everyone can be happy. But we can't. It just gives us a little hit. Very nice. But that's sukha, but ananda is what we're looking for. And if we want to help people have that, we have to have an experience of that, and therefore we have to let go of our fear. And that's very difficult to do. Our father, Krishna, is in the pool saying, jump, I'll catch you. And we're going, that's our circumstance. But Prabhupada is saying, that's what we have to do. That's what Krishna consciousness is. It's just letting go. letting go of these things. But our fear is comfortable. It's what we're used to. It's our go-to place. So it's difficult to let it go. And how do we do our bench presses? What kind of gym do we go to? In the Vedas, we have the description of the, in the Rig Veda. Has anyone read the Rig Veda? It's a great read if you like yajnas and sacrifices and all that stuff. But it tells how to create the fire yajna, etc. But if you read it, you find out that this creation of the yoga of the peat is actually a recreation of the cosmos. So every day, the Brahman is supposed to recreate the world. Now think about it. We go to bed at night. We dream all night like lunatics. And we even forget who we are. And we think we're trees and ducks and all kinds of stuff going on. And then we wake up in the morning. And we have to recreate ourselves again. Now you go tonight feeling really happy. And you wake up in the morning feeling bleh. And we don't know why. So you have to recreate. You start with a yajna, with a sacrifice. Jai. Krishna, Krishna. So this is the purpose of the sacrifice, is to recreate the day. And we have an opportunity as devotees in that mood of yajna to recreate every day for Krishna to appear in our life every day. Krishna to appear again. And we try to connect with him again, and we try to make him happy again, trying to see Krishna's smile and imagine Krishna's smile, to do something that will make Krishna smile. Imagine that. And that's a real meditation. That's how the Goswamis meditate. They meditate that they are manjaris and gopis, and they're trying to make Krishna smile. So how do we make Prabhupada smile? How do we make Krishna smile? That should be our meditation every day. And if we want to see him, as we said, we have to ask. If we want to recreate the day, we have to practice asking Krishna, help me. It's like asking your mother to fix it. Your mother, when you're a child, your mother just fixes everything. You cut your knee, your mother will fix it. You run to your mother, you know, you just show the knee. You don't even say words, you just show the knee. The mother knows what to do. That's her job. You know, that's how a child thinks. If you get a fright, you run to your mother. If your brother thumps you, you run to your mother. And you run around in circles going, look at me, look at me, look at me. And hiding behind your father's leg because he's big. So we have to depend on Krishna. He's there. And we can ask him like Arjuna asked him. The whole Bhagavad Gita is about Arjuna asking for help. Otherwise, the Bhagavad Gita wouldn't have happened. So Arjuna is dependent on this relationship. Arjuna asked for help. And Arjuna called him friend and said, help me. And we have to also trust that Krishna is our friend and ask for help. Every day, recreate the moment. Start again. Because generally the day before, we blew it again. Is that your experience? That's my experience. You know, you start off brilliantly in the day, and you do some puja and some chanting, and then you meet your first person and you act like an idiot again. You criticize someone again. We blow it every day, but we get an opportunity to recreate the day and then ask Krishna for help again. And every day, Krishna helps us, and the next day is a little brighter, incrementally brighter. Prabhupada said it's like going on an airplane journey. When you're in the airplane, you're just on the airplane, you're looking out and seeing clouds, but you get off the airplane and you're in Delhi. Wow. You know? So it's like every day it seems like same old, same old. But actually, things are changing. Things are slowly changing every day. And we have to have that faith and do that sadhana and do that exercise every day. And to help us, the Chaitanya Charitamrita recommends Sadhu Sangha Namakirtana Bhagavata Shravana Matura Vasa Sri Murtira Shadhaya Sevana. One should associate with devotees, chant the holy name of the Lord, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, reside at Mathura, and worship the deity with faith and veneration. Five things. Five exercises. Five things that we can easily do. And then the next verse. Shakala Shraddha Shrestha E Pancha Anga, Krishna Prema Janmaya E Panchirya Alpasanga. These five limbs of devotional service are the best of all. Even a slight performance of these five awakens love for Krishna. So every day we have to do a slight performance, that's all. A slight performance. These are our exercises. Just a little every day, and the next day, the world you create is brighter. By worship of the deity, by chanting, by reading, by opening our minds to Krishna's friends, the devotees, by making our place holy, like Vrindavan, then we become part of the Leela of Krishna's story. And we become part of the chanting, the resonance of the chanting. We create Leela with our murti. Every day, it's a Leela dealing with your deity. You ask Krishna, any of you who've done deity worship, you know this. Some days you come in, the deity's smiling, and some days you come in, and the deity's not smiling. And you have no idea. It's the same. It's just marvel, isn't it? You know, what's going on? We have these relationships. I can tell you a little story. A friend of mine, a professor of Sanskrit in Chennai, he passed away, a revered Sanskritist. And I went to Chennai and met with his wife to offer condolences. And she gave me his deity. And it was a little, very, very old Gopal deity. Now, of course, in our tradition, it's the Pushti Marks worship Gopal. We're not so much the Gopalites. So I was kind of going, oops, thank you. Yeah. But it was given with such affection and love that, of course, you have to accept it. It's, someone can pass you a deity and you pass it on, but in a certain mood, you just know. So I had to stand. I was traveling around India, and everywhere I'd go, I'd put a little tissue and put him on it and get some flowers, scratching my head. How do you worship Gopal? I had no idea. So I went to Mumbai, and Mumbai is a busy place, as you know, and I had a meeting at 7 in the morning. So, and I was going to be away all day, more or less. So I was in a hotel, and I put Gopal on a table, on a tissue by himself, and I went out to look for flowers about 5 in the morning, and no flowers to be had. So I came back and I said, Gopal, I'll bring some flowers in the evening, because that's what I was doing. I was just offering him some flowers, so I just thought I should apologize. I'll bring some this evening. Came back in the evening about 12 hours later, Mumbai, just your head's a mess. Took my shoes off, came into the room, and as I was walking in, up the little corridor, I thought, I forgot the flowers. Oh, God. So I walked into the room apologizing. Oh, Gopal, I'm so sorry. And there he was, on his table, surrounded by flowers. Jasmines, marigolds. And someone had replaced the tissue with an ornate little cloth. Someone in the hotel. And I never found out who it was, because that person went off shift and didn't come back for 3 days. And I was leaving. And I was just looking at Gopal, and I suddenly realized, you know, I have a relationship with him. You know, he's taking care of me. He's not depending on me to take care of him. You know, if he was depending on that, we'd be in trouble. You know, he can take care of himself grandly. He's only here for me. It's like such, that's a Leela. That's part of Krishna's story. We are all part of Krishna's story, if we want to be. If we recreate the day, and every day is a new day, to have that relationship again. And we share realizations with our friends. The world, to feel joy, we have to let go of the feeling of fear. It's what holds us back. It's what holds us back from Krishna and from Krishna's love. and from the joy of Janmashtami. Which brings us to where we started. And I think we should end there. I'll end actually with a shloka. Now this shloka is, I don't know if you can see the Sanskrit, it's a long Sanskrit shloka. It's the same length, it's sung to the same tune as the Shadastikam prayers. But this is the translation. Because I was totally devoted to lust and anger, I took pleasure in criticizing others, and I desired prestige. Not giving up my pride, I remained a fool, and used my mind daily to deceive myself and others. But merciful Lord Madhava saw that I misused his own material creation, and with the luster of his face, which resembles the spring moon, he stole back my mind. That's by an acharya, one of our acharyas. Has anyone ever heard that shloka before? Hands up all those who like that shloka. That's very few. That's actually written by Gopinath Acharya, who resides in Oxford. He wrote this shloka in Sanskrit when he first saw Radha Madhava in Leicester. So this is the Leela is going on. Our acharyas are still manifesting, still writing shlokas. And this is the kind of shloka that people learn off by heart, so that when they go in front of Madhava, they say that, because it resonates with them. So let's get with the program, get with the Leela, get rid of our fear, learn how to love Krishna, Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hari Hari. Has anyone got any answers?
I think it's a special day commemoration of Mother Kalinganath's disappearance in this world. And I'm going to ask Radhakanta Prabhu, who was with her the whole time, during that serving her, during that period, to actually maybe express what she went through and what her is a positive aspect of what he saw from this experience. So Radhakanta Prabhu, can you? I'm putting you on the spot a bit, but...
Thank you for the opportunity, Prajan Prabhu. You have caught me off guard. Obviously there's a lot that we could speak about Mother Kalinganath, and I'm sure there are many devotees sitting here who would be in a better position to speak about Mother Kalinganath than myself. But seeing as it is her disappearance day, I'll just say a few words that come to my mind. Mother Kalinganath was, of course, a very dear disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And I think many devotees sitting in this room were touched by her selflessness. Personally, my experience with Mother Kalinganath was that she always never really cared about what she could get from me. Rather, her mood was always, what can she do to help me progress in my Krishna consciousness? It was always about giving and never about getting. Mother Kalinganath ki jai.
Hari Hari Bol. Thank you, Radhakanta Prabhu.
You first? Now, regarding the relationship, establishing relationship with God, the theory of transmigration of souls, we are part and parcel of God, soul, the journey of the soul to God. Atma to Paramatma. And in this connection, I would like to bring Aurobindo's theory of transmigration of souls. And he says that it is possible for the human being to reach God, provided he leaves all his weaknesses. So many men, he goes on worshipping God, but not with heart. Lack of concentration, lacking in concentration, being susceptible to all human weaknesses. He cannot desire. He cannot just separate himself, weakened by all the weaknesses of a human being. All the time that he goes to temple, he worships God, he does all these things, but he cannot keep aloof himself from all the human frailties.
Yeah. Thank you.
In Vrindavan, there appears to be a dichotomy. In Vrindavan, there appears to be a dichotomy that the people will say Ram Ram and worship principally Lord Ram, whereas Krishna, they have more of an affectionate relationship with Krishna. And I see village people, they come before the deity and they'll say, like, I've done it again, I said I wouldn't, and go into the circumstances of where they haven't been as good as they felt they could have been, and speaking to Krishna just like their sister or their friend or their neighbor, or having a very, very close, affectionate. So my question is
that in this purport,
in the very last line of the purport, it says, completely free from the fear of Kamsa's atrocities, he accepted the child simultaneously as an object of affection, as an object of worship by prayers. So my question is this easy to attain, to have this simultaneous affection and worship, or are they supportive of each other, or is there a dichotomy there that they're, it appears from practice that I see they're two different things. Can we combine them? Is that's my question.
I do think it's not either or, it's both and. I think a lot of us, I mean, we all start our spiritual journey as a religious journey, where we're doing prescribed things. That's in every religion in the world. That's you know, you join, you don't understand very much. You haven't read the texts. Even if you do read them, you don't understand them. So you're just dependent on people telling you. I just noticed the sign over there saying, you know, men bow this way, women bow that way. You're just telling people what to do. You know, bow this way, bow this, tip your head. You see people in temples going like this and jumping around, and I don't know what's going on. You know, and I'm not even sure they know what's going on. They've just been told that this is what you do, in some cases. So we do these things, and we do them to advance ourselves, because we want to advance, that we want to show our fealty. But we don't necessarily do them out of affection. We do them maybe out of fear as well, that, you know, if we don't do them, then our ears are going to fall off, or, you know, we're going to get sick, or something. There's going to be a reaction. God's going to be displeased, and it's just going to be pretty hellish. A lot of us, you know, when we think of Lord Nrisimhadeva, it's like that. It's great to come in front of Lord Nrisimhadeva, the deity, but you don't want to bring him into your house. You know, because it's just, everyone tells all these horror stories that if you worship the Nrisimha deity, then if you do one little thing wrong, then the house goes on fire and stuff. So we become afraid of God in that sense. So how does anyone end up worshipping Lord Nrisimhadeva? And it's out of affection. It's out of love. That's how Prahlad Maharaj worshipped Lord Nrisimhadeva. And the particular text, one of the texts in the fifth canto that we always quote from Prahlad Maharaj, is about how Lord Nrisimhadeva destroys our fear, that he's come to protect us from fear itself, from fear of ourselves. So he's come to elevate us beyond fear and to understand love. And Lord Nrisimhadeva's fierceness his fierce form. He can have the loving form with Lakshmi Nasringha, but when he's in this fierce Ugra Nasringha form, that form is there to show us how much he's willing to do to offer us protection. He's showing us, this is, I'm going to look like this and with nails like this so that I can protect you. Have no fear. Yet we look at the form and we're afraid. Kind of miss the point. And we miss the point of Krishna an awful lot. We go in front of Krishna and our prayer is, please Lord this, please Lord this, please Lord this. But the subtext could be, don't hit me, don't hit me. Don't be the one who beats me up when I do wrong. So once we get over that lack of understanding of who Krishna is, and that's what Prabhupada said to us, we have to understand who Krishna is. Krishna loves us. When we understand that, we can understand that we can love Krishna. Once we see Krishna's love, we know what love is. Therefore, we can unleash our own love. But until that time, we do have to do all the right things so that we don't offend the Lord, because we don't know how to approach the Lord. We don't want to offend the Lord. This is God. I mean, if the Queen came, you'd have to act in a certain way. And people come beforehand and tell you how you act and what you call her mom, and you know, you bow your head a little bit and do all that. You have to know how to act. So what to speak of the Lord himself. Yes, of course we have to act like that. But when we are in love, it's different. And it is a balancing act. We may feel full affection for the Lord, but we understand for everybody else, we can't run up and embrace the deity. Because then everyone will start doing that, and that'll just be inappropriate. So we have to maintain the decorum. So it's not either or. So the decorum has to be maintained, the rules and regulations we follow, we bow down at certain times, stand up at certain times, and do this and jump around in circles certain times. And that's all good. Because at least we're not offending the Lord, we're helping people understand how to approach God in different ways. And there are many ways to approach God, there isn't just one way. God is, he's open to all kinds of expressions of love. But the feeling, that's something else. And it's like the story of Prabhupada when his son, Prabhupada was talking to some friends, and his son got up and climbed up on him and climbed up on his lap and started climbing around his neck. And one of his friends says, oh, don't climb up on him, he's a Vaishnava. And the son turned around and said, he's my father. I said, we'd like that. If we have an affectionate relationship with Krishna, we're not afraid of Krishna to the extent that, like the gopis, we'll stand on his head if that relieves his headache. We'll do whatever has to be done. So I think you make a good point, and it's in my opinion, it would be either or not. It's not either or, it's both and. And I think it's never either or. In Indian thought, it's never either or. It's never one thing. It's never, I'm a Vaishnava and you're a Christian, therefore you're wrong. It's never that. Because the Christian is also a bhakta, because of the processes, the nine devotional, they practice them as well. So what's going on? So it's always a little complex, and it's always both and. So we have to be able to see broadly, think very broadly as devotees. And there is a text, I didn't quote it here, where Krishna says that if someone discriminates based on another person's perception, he comes as death. So if we look at someone else and see they're different and discriminate based on that, Krishna comes as death. He really doesn't like that. He doesn't like that way of seeing. It's not broad-minded at all. And if we see like that, then we're in the religious mode. It's not spiritual. It's religious. My religion, my God, my temple. Even in ISKCON, you know, my temple's the best temple. This is the best worship. We get sectarian and a bit weird. It's not Krishna consciousness. It's just it's religion and
my guru,
all that. Yeah, it's religious and it's better than a kick in the head or a poke in the eye or a blood stick, but not much. It keeps us off the streets, but we have to go beyond that. We have to become spiritual to connect with love, to connect with Krishna. Time for one final question, because the class will be short today because Janmashtami is coming and we have to do all kinds of things. Oh. Yeah. There was 2 minutes. He told me one time, you told me another time. I do get confused. We will end there. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Radha Gokulananda ki.
Jai.